Yeah. I mean, I suppose the obvious place is how it all started, and I was watching a David Attenborough program on the great apes, and as I kind of looked at them, as I saw him kind of with them, I think I kind of was struck by their kind of facial similarity to our own, and then I kind of thought, oh, it's quite interesting that when I'd looked at a chimpanzee, I hadn't kind of particularly thought of it as an individual. No, I'd thought of it maybe as a bit like a kind of banana, you always see the same. And it kind of struck me, this idea of trying to look at individuality would be interesting. And because I think David Attenborough was talking somewhat about the kind of getting a sense of these apes having different personalities. And then that kind of made me think of, you know, the photographs that we all use in our documents, on our driving license, in our passports, you know, are these very kind of straight on pictures, which are about kind of clearly showing the face, looking into camera. And it just kind of struck me that it would be interesting to try and do passport photographs of the great apes and kind of see if you could understand a little bit about their kind of individual identities. So I wasn't an animal photographer. So, you know, your first thing is kind of how can you do this? So I began to write away to places like Monkey World in the UK, kind of asking if I could come and make some portraits. And I actually got some quite hostile responses at the beginning. I think I got a letter back from Monkey World, which kind of said that you can't possibly make a monkey or an ape sit for a portrait. What you're trying to do is cruel. And I can remember feeling kind of really bad when I kind of got this letter. But then I'd been reading a couple of books at the same time about some people travelling in the Congo. And I'd seen in the photo section, kind of the section of kind of the backstage of the trip, them holding these young orphaned apes. So I knew that there was a way that to do it. And, I, you know, obviously I didn't want to be involved in anything cruel. And that's why throughout the project, you'll see I didn't use any, I suppose you'd call them actors, you know, the ones that are kind of employed to be in films or anything, which, you know, those are animals which have a kind of a very, you know, they can live until they're 45, but the ages that they can actually use them in films and things is only for a few years, because as they get older, they get very strong. So I knew I didn't want to do that. But also, you know, I didn't also want to risk a trip to Africa if I didn't know that the project would work. So each time I had an assignment, I would write away, or I would kind of contact anything that, you know, zoos that, and ask if I could take a portrait. And I had an assignment in Berlin, and they said, oh, we've got this young gorilla called Shanga, and who had a human surrogate mother, because her gorilla mother was a bit, little bit neurotic and wasn't able to look after her and wasn't producing any milk either. But they decided to give her a human surrogate mother, and I went, and it was a very hectic moment of taking this picture. Shanga the gorilla was looking everywhere, and I couldn't get it to look in camera. And then just right at the end, on the last frame, there was this one picture, and it was also a little bit closer in than a passport photo, because obviously the passport photo we normally have our kind of shoulders and stuff. And there was something about this last picture which seemed to be more direct. There was something about the eyes really asking you questions by cropping in closer. And when I saw this picture, I was like, yeah, I think this is a project which can work. Yeah. And from there, I think it was Christmas coming up, I booked a ticket to Cameroon. I contacted a sanctuary which had gorillas and gorillas and chimpanzees, and that's kind of how the project got started.
Amazing. Yeah, we've got the picture up, if anyone can see the streaming screen there. That's a picture of Shanga up at the moment. It's an amazing image, and I guess you talked about it before, but the kind of humanity you see in these guys, and sort of people seeing them as, you know, you know, the stories and their names and you know, understanding that these are kind of, you know, individuals. And what I found fascinating when we were sort of putting this all together was looking at the stories and drawing out the kind of unique characteristics and traits that these guys have got. So obviously, you know, people kind of tend to lump them all together, don't they? And you know, when you actually read those stories and some of the kind of quite funny stories you kind of talk about trying to capture, I can't remember which one it was, this kind of like kept on reaching out and whipping, like you're trying to put peanuts on the screen, on the lens or something, and they kept on sort of stealing them away from you, and other ones kind of dive bombing you from trees and things like that. I mean,
that was at the beginning. At the beginning, I went on this first trip to Cameroon. I then had to kind of work out how to get them to look into camera. So my first thing was, I'm going to do that with food. So I would strap a peanut to the end of the lens, and it worked. They did look at the peanut, but then I had the problem that they then would kind of swipe for the camera. So then as I kind of began to spend a little bit of time with them and watched them, I realized that one of the things that they spend a lot of their time is grooming each other, like kind of sitting, kind of picking away, looking for fleas and ticks and little things. And I noticed that it was kind of a way of almost like bonding between them. So I learned that later on, as I instead of kind of starting to take the picture straight away, I would go up and I would groom them for a little bit, and you know, they would immediately kind of relax a little bit because they associate that with a friend. They don't associate that with being aggressive. And then I would kind of make my way up kind of their arm, and then I'd make my way up all the way to their chin, kind of pretending to find fleas. And then I'd get to their chin and I'd just pull out a little hair or something. I'd give them a little tweak. And then as I moved my hand, they kind of thought that I had a flea in it, and they're very interested to see what it is. So they would just stare at the end of my finger, and then I'd just bring my hand up to my camera and check my focus. And that became my technique with the chimpanzees. But here you can see that's a picture of the gorillas, and that's Lulu, I think, who had been re-released into the wild. So that was a very different experience. So it was a group of gorillas who had all been in the orphanage, but had now been released into the wild a couple of years before. And with them, I'd had to hike for a couple of days to find them. And it was much more about being very kind of unaggressive and unthreatening in my body language, because they're incredibly strong, these animals, you know, and if they wanted to do any harm, they can. So you can't kind of march in there kind of all upright. You have to kind of bend your shoulders and kind of keep your head down and be almost very submissive. So that was kind of a thing. So I had kind of different strategies. And then I'd say for the orangutans were definitely the easiest. They're very kind of much, much more relaxed than the gorillas, chimpanzees and bonobos. And with them, it was kind of quite easy because they kind of hang around and, you know, you would just kind of, I almost could just kind of ask them to look in the camera and they'd just kind of sit there. So the orangutans were definitely the easiest to get to look in camera.
And were there any particular guys that you've got who are just, you know, standouts as your favourites, who you kind of felt that you had a particular bond with, or just, you know, had, you know, I remember the story you said about, I think, Kitwicky, was about... Kitwick, yeah, so about how he was the kind of like the ambassador, sort of like, you know, walking around and kind of introducing himself to...
he was a particularly kind of social kind of bonobo. I mean, I have to say that one of my favourites in terms of my experience was a gorilla called Helene, and because she was just very. I mean, in a way, it's a little bit sad, by the way, because she had been brought up by a family and they had, for her first few years, they had raised her almost like one of their own children. So she had kind of sat down, had dinner with them every, you know, for their meals, and they dressed her up and was part of the family. You know, but the problem was that as she then, because that was fine when she was very small, but as she got bigger, they begin to get stronger and stronger. But she had, because of this, she kind of almost was more used to being around humans. So she kind of followed me around and was particularly kind of friendly to me. So there was this kind of mixture of appreciating her company, but then also realizing that it had come from her being put in this kind of very artificial place. And to get that portrait literally took me hours. I mean, she kind of became this little game of, like, she would kind of, she'd watch me doing a couple of the other pictures, and then she would wander around, I'd wander around, and then she'd kind of put her face, she would look at me like that, face straight on, and then I'd just lift my camera, and just as I'd lift my camera, she'd, like, turn away. And it literally, I mean, it took me a long time before I got that picture. It became a little bit of a game. I kind of felt she knew exactly what I was trying to do, and she was just like, kind of, oh yeah, go for it, would kind of sit there, and then literally turn her head away. So, and then I eventually managed to get her.
I love that story. That's amazing. And it's an amazing portrait as well. Libby, I think we've had a couple of questions that have come in. If you want to pose those, or if any of the guys who are on here live want to kind of unmute themselves and ask a question for James.
I think first question we had for you was basically on your process. So you describe your photography as like typological. Can you explain what that means a little bit further, what that actually is in terms of photography?
Well, I suppose that it's kind of, it's a method of taking the almost the same picture of the same kind of thing in the same way. And I suppose that what becomes interesting for me is the fact of the kind of seeing the repetition in a way. So, you know, one of these faces on their own, you know, is kind of interesting, but I think you begin to be able to tell a narrative as you begin to show more and more of them. So, you know, you're seeing, so, I mean, particularly with the chimpanzees, you had chimpanzees with kind of quite kind of pale skin and ones with freckles, and some of them almost have, on that, the very end row on the left side there is gorillas. And then the next column is, the second column from left, is those three we can see there are all chimpanzees, and you can see their faces are as dark as the gorillas. It's a gorilla at the top, but the others are chimpanzees. And then, and this is something I've done when I've exhibited the work, is we have this grid, and I kind of almost use them a little bit like colour swatches, going from the very dark faces across to the, you know, more the freckles, and then the lighter faced chimpanzees, and then across to the orangutans, and then to the bonobos again. So I think what the topological way of taking the pictures means that you have this kind of, you know, it's through that that you get the sense of kind of identity and them having different personalities. And then it's, you know, it's something I've used in other projects, like we've got Where Children Sleep up there, you know, which is really an exploration of the lives that children are living kind of around the world. So with that, it's, again, it's quite a simple format of a child's portrait taken on a plain background, and then almost like a still life of the bedroom. And I think with that one, I kind of want the portrait to tell you about the kids, and by photographing it on a plain background, I'm kind of treating them kind of a little bit more equally, and then it becomes the bedroom which talks about their different circumstances.
Cool. I think it's quite interesting, the process sort of, it shows the unique differences between the apes, but at the same time it just shows how similar we are to the apes.
I mean, I think one thing that was important for me in this project was because during it I also met some interesting baboons and mandrills and other monkeys, which have amazing faces, and I did consider kind of expanding it. But I then decided that I think that, you know, as humans, we are clearly different to animals, but we are animals. So I think that by just keeping the great apes, you know, who are so genetically similar to us, we have this, they're the kind of grey area between man and animal. And I think that that's a very interesting space because they kind of, our real link to the animal world. Like, you know, obviously you're not going to relate to a slug or a worm or, you know, even a dog, you feel quite different. But I think these great apes, you know, some of them sharing, you know, 98% of our DNA are that kind of the bridge to the human to the animal human world.
I think when you look at them and you look at their facial expressions sometimes, and the fact that some have got eyelashes and different facial hair and stuff like that, it's just, you just look at them in a completely different way. With the book as well, you know, when you actually look at the physical book is a really nice way of realizing that. And I think that's a favorite way that you like to. That's one of the outputs I think that you seem most proud of, and in terms of how to showcase your photography. Is that a fair comment?
Do you mean with the book?
With the book, this book, but the other books that you.
I suppose what I like about the book is that I feel that it's something that, you know, very few people can go to art galleries, where I think that a book's something that you know, people have in their homes, and so in a way it's a little bit more, if you call it democratic, but there's a more chance, there's a bigger chance of reaching a wider audience.
Yep. Got mine here.
Players releasing it as an NFT collection will only encourage that more.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hope that it engages people in the way, like in the book. So in the book, you have just the name of you have the portrait of the ape, and then you have their name on the side with nothing else. And then at the back, you have the biographies, because I think that there are different readings of these pictures. For me, the most interesting part of the project is what I just talked about, this kind of gap between man and animal. However, there is also a lot of other messages through these pictures. You know, if you go back and you read through all the biographies, I think all but two of the 50 apes had their parents killed for the bushmeat trade in the cases of the gorillas, chimpanzees and bonobos, and for the live pet trade in the cases of the orangutans. So, you know, there's other messages which I think are important about kind of, you know, the kind of saving their habitat and the plight of these animals, especially with the kind of expansion of humans. You know, there's less and less space for them to live. So it's, you know, I hope that what I've done is not a document of something that's going to become kind of extinct in the wild for, you know, for my grandchildren or, you know, for the future generations.
Absolutely. We do have another question, which was based on the travelling involved in your photography, particularly Somalia. So what's it like documenting in a country where there is like a humanitarian crisis like Somalia?
No, I didn't do these in Somalia. I did these ones in... I did them in Cameroon, Republic of Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, Indonesia, Shanga I did in Germany, and Mili I did in America.
I think this particular question is about another project.
Was it about another project? That might have been, yeah. I mean, I've been to Northern Kenya. I haven't been actually into Somalia. I have to say that my trip to Congo for this, the ape project, was one of the most kind of hazardous I've ever done, because, you know, I didn't have very much money when I was doing this, and, you know, Kinshasa's like there's absolutely no tourism. The only people there who go there, Europeans, tend to be kind of business people who, you know, the hotels were like $300 a night, you know, and I didn't have that money at that time. So I was kind of like stayed in this guest houses, you know. I kind of remember the taxi driver on the way in, I'd gone to, I'd gone to transfer money, and I'd transferred a couple of like $300, and I literally got two carrier bag fulls of notes back. And then I went back to the hotel, and then later on the taxi driver came back with this other guy and tried to rob me. You know, it was kind of, you know, I didn't really, my French is terrible. So it was like also a very, a kind of an adventure. And I mean, Kinshasa was a level of decay that I hadn't, it could have changed now, but when I was there, I mean, we were going, I had a taxi once, and the guy was like, needed to stop, and he was like, shouted at me, he's like, you need to get out and like kind of drag the car back, because you know driving along, we saw there was a body just on the street. There had been a telephone, an electrical wire. It was a tough trip, that, and I did end up on the Congo trip, I did actually come down with cerebral malaria when I came back. So that was something that wasn't very pleasant.
No, definitely sacrificing for your art on that. There was a question, I think, about the Disciples project as well, wasn't there? Just the kind of thought process that went on behind that, and you know, which of these guys were your favourites? I'll see if I can bring it up on the screen.
So the Disciples was a project I kind of started kind of just after finishing this one, actually, and it came about because I'd been in Los Angeles, and as I was walking down the street, I'd noticed how many of the girls at that point looked like Britney Spears. And I kind of thought to myself, I was thinking, like, was that a kind of conscious decision, or where was that coming from? So I set up this website, which I called doyoulooklikebritney.com. And after a couple of months of it being active, I don't think I had any responses. So I kind of thought that this isn't working. And then I thought, oh, I wonder if I go to a concert. And she wasn't actually playing, but there were these other people playing. And I kind of thought, oh, I just kind of set this thing up. I mean, I want, let's go to a concert and see what the people look like. So the first one I actually went to, yeah, was the Marilyn Manson concert. And when I got there, I was kind of amazed that I was kind of expecting just like goths, normal goths. But actually what I found was this kind of amazing thing. I mean, people had copied him with like the having one contact lens another color. You can't see very well here. When I show this work, we print them full life size, each person, so the prints are about kind of 1.60 meters by about 5 meters long, and you can really see them. But when you see them at that size, you can see that the people have got, you know, they've got one eye brown and one eye a blue colour. Some of them, you know, they've hung crosses upside down like he does. And at this Marilyn Manson concert, I'd photographed the people individually, and when I got back, I looked at them, and as I kind of had the pictures out in front of me, I kind of didn't feel I had kind of one particularly iconic kind of portrait, but as I looked at them as a group, they seemed to be more interesting. So I kind of put them together as these groups, which was a little bit also a play on the line, because these are literally photographed outside the concert before people go in. And then, you know, so I think this Marilyn Manson image then just set me off on, I just thought, okay, I'm just going to try and go to as many different concerts of different types of music, and see the fans. This is a Bjork concert that I did in London. And obviously, you know, I'm distilling, you know, obviously within a concert, there is a diversity, and I was looking for people who I felt looked like the band. But I definitely think that there was, I was talking, you know, for example, the Kiss concert I went to, which I don't think's here, but there was, you know, there's 40,000 people at that Kiss concert, you know, maybe 2,500 of them had the makeup like Kiss. So you're distilling a kind of truth, but it's definitely not, obviously, concerts are more varied than that.
I think
it's a shame. This one is, this is about, this is how I show it when I do a production, which actually has the music on it when you hear it properly, which kind of, so you get the idea of the kind of a sense of the band. And also we have the, when we've shown it as an exhibition, we sometimes have the music and we kind of have the name hidden so people kind of can guess. And people are pretty good at guessing which the bands are on the whole.
Well, especially with Rod Stewart, that one's...
That's how you can see there. We've got the little CD player on the side, and people listen to it, and it's fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, that Rod Stewart's probably my favourite, because I think that in a way, kind of, some of the concerts, you know, Kiss, for example, there was that kind of element of getting dressed up, whereas the Rod Stewart, the people I found at the Rod Stewart picture of concert, I really found that they kind of lived that, that he'd influenced them in the way that they actually kind of lived all the time, not just dressing up, going to a concert.
I think it's really interesting, because usually your music taste sort of makes you unique, so it's something that is different about you. But this is sort of bringing people together who all have the same unique interest in a specific music genre. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah, and I think there's a kind of correlation with the Apes. Like with the Apes, I was kind of wanting to look at individuals and see their different identity, where with the music fans was more about how individuals kind of form groups to form an identity, you know. So there was a kind of, I think that there is a kind of, although they're very different, the pictures, there is a kind of a step in terms of kind of exploring this idea of identity and, you know, the tribes of people kind of coming together with, you know, feeling that you're coming together with like-minded people and that becomes an important part of people's identity.
Yeah, I think that's also really relevant to NFT communities. So when people collect NFTs from collections, it is sort of forming like-minded individuals in a community just like that, actually.
A question that I have, you started the project, or the project is from early 2000s. We are now nearly 20 years later. First of all, what brought you to start an NFT collection? That's the first question. And during those 15 or 18 years, what happened? Did you follow up on all those apes? Did you went and visited them back? Did you took some other pictures? Is there a continuity in the from early 2000s until today?
So there's a few questions there. I mean, in terms of going back, I would have said a few years ago, I do one project and then you move on to the next project, you know. So I'm breaking that with Where Children Sleep. I am actually nearly finished with a new book for it. But with the apes, I followed up a little bit. I know a little bit. So, for example, Khan, who's one, I think if you scroll a little bit further down, one of the gorillas on the bottom, Mark, is now, oh no, maybe I don't have him here. Actually, he's not in this grid. But Khan was a little six-month-old gorilla who I photographed, who had been taken away at 2 weeks old. He'd been found when his mother had been killed, and was being raised by a surrogate human mother. And Khan is now a silverback. You know, he's a big silverback, which kind of gives you an idea. It's amazing to think of this kind of, what was this kind of like a little baby. And I mean, I remember he kind of really clinged on to you, and now he's this huge silverback. So I'm aware of a few of their stories. I'm aware of how some of the re-released gorillas now have become mothers, and there's a kind of new generation of gorillas that have been born into the wild from these orphans. But I haven't been back. I don't know, just kind of life. I'd love to. I hadn't met my wife Amber when I did this project, and I know how much she would have loved to. So I'm always maybe I will revisit it. So that In terms of the NFTs, I mean, being honest, I don't really know that kind of much about NFTs. This is me kind of starting off. I think that that I'm always looking for this work to be shown. I think that there's some kind of important messages behind it. You know, unfortunately, I also kind of, it's one regret to me that I've never had a show in, I don't know, in some kind of middle of America places, because I kind of feel that there's this incredible, when for Darwin's, I think his 200th, I can't remember if it was anniversary of when he was born or when he died, or the Origin of Species a few years ago, you know, they did the Gallup did some polling which says that you know, still nearly a quarter of American graduates don't agree with the phrase that man evolved from from an animal. So, and I've noticed when I've shown this project, when I was doing Where Children Sleep, I went in with when we went into the Appalachian Mountains, we used a quite a religious group to try and help me find kids for that. And I showed her the book to this woman who was a very kind of evangelical Christian. And I think she really, really engaged with the work. For her, it was a real kind of like looking at it and saying, hang on, look at this similarity to our own. So I think that I'm interested in, you know, I think the more that man feels connected to animals and the animal world, the more chance we are to preserve it. And I hope that, you know, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, this NFT project will also kind of introduce the work to more people.
Stefano, did you decide yet? Because I know your community were choosing between a couple of the guys to add to the collection. Have you got a decision yet?
Yes, so absolutely. So we had to choose between Talian and Coffee. The community voted and they decided to go for Talian, which represents hope, like you described it. And I think it suits us very well for our community. Maybe you could tell us a bit more about Talian, maybe the story behind and how did you manage this particular picture.
She was like kind of, I mean, I think in general they were, you know, they were incredibly strong. You know, if you notice through the book that you've either got, they're either nearly all quite young chimpanzees, or I've got a couple of older ones, because already by the time a chimpanzee is 7 years old, it's about seven times the strength of a man. So, and she was, I can remember, was particularly kind of strong and agile. I mean, at the beginning of the project, I had trainers with shoelaces, but they were real kind of jokers, most of the chimpanzees. It really took me back to my childhood, and I can remember when I was younger, when I was about kind of 8, 9, 10, you know, years as a boy, one of my favorite things was pillow fights, you know, and there was that kind of slight atmosphere from them in the air of, you know, I had one which tried to tie my shoelaces together. You know, I would have them kind of climbing up trees behind me, so I'd be taking a picture, and then suddenly I'd get this massive whack, and it would, like, you know, and they'd kind of land on me, and I'd almost drop my camera. And there was that kind of, that general feeling of kind of mischievousness, kind of, with most of them. There were a few, like Katie, who had had a really, really tough experience, who were a little bit like that kid in the playground that hasn't got any friends. She actually bit me, I remember, on my leg. That's Katie there, and she was a little bit like, I felt quite sorry for her. She was this kind of chimp that didn't have any kind of friends. But, I mean, I have to say that I've kind of remember, I wrote down very basic notes, but there was a real moment of pandemonium while taking the pictures. So it was quite hard, it's quite hard. I could remember, luckily I took a few notes saying little things I could remember, but it was more the general experience, you know, from of them kind of collectively, of kind of, and I think that these pictures, the pictures as you see them feel very kind of quite almost still and calm with them just looking at you. But the actual moment was kind of complete pandemonium during the moment of taking them.
I was just going to ask about Gregoire, who's my favourite, because I think he was the oldest.
Gregoire was 60 when I took this picture, 60. And I mean, I think Jane Goodall had personally seen him at Brazzaville Zoo, and he'd been kept in this concrete, tiny cage. Had hardly fed. I mean, apparently he was completely hairless when they found him. He was he was so thin you could see like all of his bones. He looked like kind of, I think when we see those pictures of people from famines who are very malnourished. So first what the Jane Goodall Institute did was employ somebody. And then they would ask the local community and expatriates who were living in Brazzaville to keep food. So he began to get a little bit more food, and then they were able to take him. They've got a sanctuary over by Pointe Noire. And there he when I met him, he was with Labielle, another chimpanzee who had also had a very difficult time. They were like this kind of old couple. I mean, Lavielle had had a similar experience. She'd been kept in a very small enclosure, and after she was rescued, it took her 7 years to have the confidence to go out from her. Where they were was this kind of a bit like a big shed that was an inside space. And then they had, with a kind of garden around it, which was, you know, had grass and everything. And it took her 7 years before she had the confidence to go out onto that grass and kind of interact. And now that had happened a few years ago, so you could tell she was quite contented. But she was, again, she was 29 when I photographed her. And normally that would be much too dangerous to go in with because they'd be much too strong. But because she was such a kind of a gentle chimpanzee, it was fine for me to go in with her. Gregoire actually then lived another 5 years. He lived and died when he was 65. He's 60 in this picture. And he was a little bit more like kind of, not meaning this insultingly to my granddad, but it felt a little bit like being with my granddad, you know, he's like just at the end, you know. And he was this kind of like, kind of quite gentle, old kind of man. And, you know, it was a very, I think that was one of the most special moments in the project, was with Lavielle and Gregoire, spending time with them.
Wonderful, thank you. We've got Rambo, 1STBLD, on the line. Did you have any particular questions for James or Libby? Have we got any other questions that came up previously? Hi.
Any intention to add more NFTs to this collection? Because I feel that the rarity traits can expand to all kinds of different things, right? Including eye color Yeah, it's just so many. The amount of variation in rarity traits is just so much more complex than what you find in your regular EFP project.
Are you meaning making more photographs or releasing more images from this that are already done?
More photographs.
I mean, it has always been a dream of mine to go to Rwanda and do the mountain gorillas, because in this project you've got the lowland gorillas, and the mountain gorillas are a little bit hairier, they've got a little bit different faces. The problem is that you're not allowed. I did take these to have a consistency with these. I did use a flash. because I wanted the images to feel very consistent depending on what the light was like. And you're not allowed to use a flash. So that's why I haven't done that. I mean, this is making me thinking maybe I should. I mean, like I said earlier, I thought that this project I'd kind of done it, but maybe, I mean, I was in Sierra Leone, this is quite a while ago, and they had an albino chimpanzee, but I wasn't allowed to photograph it, unfortunately. So I kind of think that if it was a situation where I find that there's some kind of a very different faces to what I already have, I would love to continue it.
Just to answer another part of that question, the traits. So we have pulled out a lot of the kind of aesthetic and also sort of personality traits, and those will be embedded within the NFTs. So this page hasn't actually been released yet. It is live though. It's just Japes with filters. But it allows people to kind of go in and look at it and, well, see which are James's favourites, because he's sort of selected, you know, a wider edit, and then also his absolute favourites. There's some which are particularly rare, so there's 13 which are kind of like rare japes. And it allows you to kind of filter by ape family, gender, where they were born, the age range, but also personality. So, you know, if you particularly wanted to look at, you know, who's adventurous, then, you know, it's going to be Koodle, if that's how you say his name right. You know, if you wanted to, you need to reset by clicking there, but if you wanted to kind of look at, right, I want, you know, one with brown eyes and clean shaven, then, you know, it allows you to see, you know, right, there's some orangutans and bonobos there. So it just kind of, it's to your point, you know, that all of these different traits, there's a lot there, and it allows people, I think, when you think about avatars and the kind of, you know, the Bored Ape, which I guess I wonder actually if Bored Apes hadn't existed, whether we would have approached James and sort of been having this conversation. That was the kind of genesis thought, I guess, but you know, that's, that community is built around their sort of the representation of people in the virtual world, I guess, as an avatar of themselves. But you know, and a lot of it is about the kind of, you know, particular, in that case, more sort of aesthetic traits. But that'll all be embedded.
I'll be interested to see how this unfolds, because one thing I've noticed with the book is that kind of, I mean, as a generalisation, quite often if you show the book to kids, young kids, they'll kind of sometimes look through and kind of find their own face in there and say,
yes,
oh, that looks like me. Whereas I've noticed that adults will quite often look through it and say, oh, that looks like someone else. So it'll be interesting to see, like, kind of, you know, what will happen, like, how people might kind of identify with one face or not another.
Yeah. No, definitely. And the names as well, I think, Stéphane, you were saying that it was more like your son, I think you said, was going through, and I think Zidane, you said, was his favourite, and he was like, but because it was the name, he just thought that was so cool. So yeah, I think people will there'll be different things which attract people to this, but yeah, there's been a lot of interest in the green list. You know, the pre-sales going live on Monday. So, you know, it will be exciting to see how this unfolds, and it's dropping with OpenSea in partnership with them on the 29th of March.
James, did you pick up some names, or they were all
original? No, I didn't name any of them. I mean, they were named by the sanctuary, so, I mean, I think Jane Goodall told me something quite interesting when I met her. She said that, because I think she was quite unique in that she wasn't a trained zoologist when she started out in the 60s. She was somebody who was very interested in chimpanzees, but she wasn't, she didn't kind of come from a scientific world. And I think that one of the things, when she began to, I think it was Richard Leakey, Dr. Leakey, I'm not sure which Leakey, who had started the project, and I think he had picked out people who specifically weren't scientists, because at that point, and some of the early criticism against her was that they were like, she'd named some of the apes and she'd written down their personality traits and stuff, and some of the scientific community reacted quite badly to the beginning, because they were saying that she was being anthropomorphic because she'd written down all of these traits and things. But she, I think she fairly quickly saw that these are animals. They are animals which have real different personalities. And I mean, I certainly saw it. You know, Wendy, in the Cameroon trip, was the kind of matriarch female. And you could, she was had a very, very calm presence around her. And the other, I could see a couple of fights that had kind of broken out, and they would kind of go to her to be resolved, you know. And like, and there's other ones that were particularly naughty, that were ones which were more confident. So I think, obviously, we can't know exactly what they're thinking in their minds, in their brains and everything, but they definitely do have very different characters. So yeah, anyway, so the names come from are normally given by the sanctuary, when the orphans arrive.
If there are no other questions, I can't see any that have come in. Is there any that are coming on the chat channel, Libby?
No, not at the moment.
Okay, cool. So I think we can wrap up. I mean, James, is there anything else you'd like to say about the project about?
No. I mean, I feel that's fairly well covered.
Okay, great. Now, that's been really, really fascinating. We've recorded this, so we'll share it, and then we're doing something similar probably late next week, but the time will be confirmed on Twitter, on Twitter Spaces. That'll be with OpenSea, and obviously just a audio version of this. But it's been really fascinating. I could listen to you talk about this project all day long, I think we should let you go now. So thank you very much, all of you, for attending. And if you've got any other questions for James, then just post them in the general Japes chat channel under Drops, and we will pose them to him for you. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Take care. See you soon.
Cheers. Bye-bye.